Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dead America. Overnight Shift. Chapter 1. Day 0. 1:47 a.m. Brighton, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. The dimly lit convenience store, situated on the outskirts of Brighton, found itself in the eerie calm of a late night shift. Carol, a woman in her mid-30s, stood wearily behind the counter, her eyes locked on the clock as it inched toward the unforgiving hour of 2 a.m. She cast nervous glances toward the entrance doors on either side of the building, silently hoping that no unexpected customers would wander in. "Only 13 more minutes," Carol murmured to herself, summoning the inner strength to endure the remaining moments. Life had not been kind to Carol. A mere 5 years earlier, she had been a picture of vitality, with a schedule of multiple CrossFit classes a week, on top of her full-time job as a trainer. However, a fateful encounter with a drunk driver had brutally ended her days of athletic vigor. Her ankle, now rebuilt, bore the scars of that tragic night. To numb the physical pain and the haunting memories of her previous life, Carol had resorted to nightly rendezvous with a bottle. As Carol gazed into the distance, her thoughts drifted to her coworker, Ricky. He stumbled out of the back room, struggling under the weight of a heavy box of bourbon bottles. "Little help here," Ricky muttered, his weary frame a testament to the toll time had taken on him. Carol, ever the reliable companion, rushed to his side and relieved him of the burden. "You gonna make it there?" she asked with genuine concern. Ricky, now in his late 40s, had experienced his own share of hardship. 15 long years at a now-defunct factory had ravaged his body. The closure of the factory and the loss of his job had shredded his sense of security, driving his wife away. Like Carol, he had found solace in the embrace of the bottle, seeking refuge from both physical and emotional anguish. As Carol began to move away, Ricky stopped her, his eyes fixed on the box of bourbon. "Almost forgot. Need you to ring me out before 2, he reminded her. Carol raised an intrigued eyebrow. "Or?" Ricky met her gaze, a mischievous glint in his eye. "Or?" "Mr. Corbin has us working graveyard 4 nights in a row," Carol revealed. "Yeah," Ricky's interest piqued. "So it's entirely reasonable to think we'd have an accident, given our sleep-deprived state," Carol continued, a sly grin forming. "An accident, huh?" Ricky chuckled. "You mean like accidentally dropping a nice bottle of bourbon on the ground?" "I mean, accidents happen like that all the time," Carol replied, her eyes flickering toward the surveillance camera in the corner of the store. Ricky nodded in agreement. "What about the cameras?" Carol glanced at the neglected cameras and smirked. "Told him to fix them a month ago, and he's still dragging his feet." Ricky contemplated for a moment. "Almost feels like we should drop 2 of these." Carol shook her head playfully. "Nah, don't want to be greedy." "But what about you?" Ricky inquired. "My thermos is behind the counter," Carol revealed. "Fill it up, and you can take the rest." Ricky's face lit up with gratitude. "You know, Carol, I hate working this shift, but I do enjoy working with you. Makes my nightmare of a life a little more bearable." Carol couldn't help but smile, delivering a playful wink. Keep sweet-talking me like that, and you might just have another ex-wife in your future. Their laughter filled the quiet store as Ricky headed toward the counter with their shared bottle, while Carol returned to the shelves to continue her stocking duties. The rhythmic ding of the entrance door disrupted the tranquility, signaling the arrival of an unexpected customer. You got 11 minutes to make your pick before the register locks us out of ringing up alcohol. I'd move quick, Carol announced, her voice laced with a touch of impatience. Normally, such a statement would prompt a thank you or incoherent mutterings from late-night patrons. However, this time, there was nothing but silence. Carol shrugged it off, attributing it to the typical rudeness of customers visiting at this hour, alcoholics seeking one last purchase to get them through the night. A minute passed in eerie silence as Carol continued her task, unaware of any activity in the front of the store. She was lost in her own countdown, 1 minute closer to freedom, when a hushed whisper pierced the stillness. "Carol! Carol!" Ricky's voice, though soft, carried an urgency that demanded her attention. "Carol," he repeated, his tone growing more forceful. Annoyed, Carol raised her voice and called out, "What, Ricky?" She finally spotted Ricky behind the counter, his face etched with fear and concern. She recognized that look. It was the same look he had worn during a robbery that had occurred 6 months earlier. Last time, Carol had reluctantly complied with the thieves' demands as they looted the cash register. Her boss had berated them for half an hour afterward. She had no intention of going through that ordeal again. Carol grabbed one of the bottles of bourbon from the shelf, gripping it tightly as she cautiously approached the front of the store, her frustration building, not because of a potential robbery, but because it likely meant she would have to extend her shift. She turned the corner, ready to confront the situation, but her resolve faltered when she saw what was happening. An elderly homeless man, known to them as Avery, stood there, his ragged clothing layered with dirt, grime, and an unsettling streak of blood. Avery was a regular, often coming in for a cup of coffee to ward off the chill of the night. However, on this particular night, his visit was not for caffeine. He stood before the counter, his gaze distant and haunted, clutching his forearm. As Carol approached, she noticed blood seeping through his trembling fingers, dripping onto the floor. "Holy hell, Avery. Are you okay?" Carol's voice was filled with genuine concern. Avery remained silent, trapped in his own world of shock and pain. "Give me a rag," Carol requested, prompting Ricky to grab a towel from behind the counter and toss it over to her. She cautiously reached out to inspect Avery's wounded arm. He flinched at her touch, terror in his eyes. "Avery, it's okay," Carol reassured him. "I'm just gonna take a look and see what's going on here." His hesitation persisted, his trust hard to earn. Carol decided to strike a deal. "Avery, I'll make you a deal, buddy," she offered. "You let me check out your arm and I'll give you a nice big cup of coffee. I'll even have Ricky pour a little dash of bourbon in it." The mention of bourbon seemed to rekindle a spark in Avery's eyes, bringing him back to the present. He nodded ever so slightly, releasing his grip on his injured arm. As he removed his hand, Carol gasped at the sight. "Avery, what the hell happened to you?" she exclaimed. "Did you piss off a dog or something?" There was a giant bite mark on Avery's arm, a particularly nasty one, with teeth impressions and a hunk of flesh torn off the bone. Carol stood there, staring at it in disbelief for a moment, before snapping back to reality. Ricky saw the expression on her face. "How bad is it?" Ricky asked. "Ricky, I'm going to need you to bring me that entire bottle, and the med kit behind the register," Carol replied. Ricky dug behind the counter, pulling out a white plastic box with a bright red healthcare logo on the top. He shook it, realizing there was nothing inside. "Doesn't look like the boss bothered to get us a new one," Ricky remarked. "Damn cheap ass," Carol muttered. She took a moment to steady herself before coming up with a new plan. Okay, just bring me a fresh towel and grab some tape off the hardware aisle. Ricky nodded, handing the bottle to Carol as he headed to the far end of the store. As he turned down the first aisle, he glanced outside. Across the street at the neighborhood bar, he saw a commotion. It wasn't uncommon for there to be a late-night brawl between patrons and security. But this looked different, even if he couldn't put his finger on it. "Where's my tape, Ricky?" Carol's voice snapped Ricky back to his task, refocusing him. "Sorry, be right there," Ricky replied. He ran down the aisle, scanning the shelves to find a roll of duct tape covered in a half-inch coating of dust. He ripped open the packaging as he returned to Carol and Avery. "This tape's been here longer than I have. Let's hope it's still good," Ricky said. Avery took another big swig from the bourbon bottle to calm his nerves. When he was done, Carol took the bottle and tossed away the dirty, blood-soaked towel. She spoke in a calming but serious tone. "Okay, Avery, this is going to hurt like hell, but I need to do it, or else that bite is going to get infected." Avery was frightened, but didn't speak. He motioned for the bottle again, taking another big swig before handing it back and nodding. Carol poured a healthy amount of alcohol over the bite. Avery let out a whimper as it burned. She quickly put the fresh towel over his arm, pressing it down on the wound, which alleviated some of the pain. "It's okay, Avery. It's okay. Worst part is over," Carol reassured him. Avery calmed down, breathing a sigh of relief as the pain subsided. Carol held the towel in place and nodded to Ricky. "Okay, let's tape this down." Ricky pulled the tape from the roll, checking that it was still sticky before wrapping it around Avery's arm. He winced in pain as the towel tightened down on the wound, but the bourbon in his system helped him mitigate the pain. "Okay, Avery, we're all done. Now that's going to be tender for quite a while. I wish I could take you to the walk-in clinic, but I don't have my car with me. You'd think working at a gas station, I'd be able to afford to fill up, but that's not the world I live in," Carol lamented. Carol looked over at the clock on the wall. It was a few minutes after 2. "Damn it," she muttered. She rushed behind the desk to gather her things. "What is it?" Ricky asked. "I'm going to have to sprint to the bus stop if I don't want to miss it," Carol replied. "Just catch the next one. It's only 15 minutes. Last time you tried that, your ankle went out, and I had to do all the heavy lifting for a month," Ricky suggested. Carol sighed, realizing Ricky was right. She was too old to be sprinting down the sidewalk to catch a bus. Defeated, she set her stuff back down. "Well, I'm not clocking out then. If I have to be here, I might as well be making some money." Ricky motioned over to Avery, who was still in shock and barely aware of his surroundings. "We had a high-maintenance customer. I got your back," Ricky offered. Carol smiled at Ricky's generosity. "You can pass the time watching the bar brawl cross the way," Ricky added. Carol nodded her head, always in the mood to watch a good brawl. But when she looked out the window, she didn't see a fight. "Damn, looks like I missed it," she commented. "Really?" Ricky was surprised. He walked over to the window with Avery following close behind. They looked out towards the bar and there was nothing. "There were at least half a dozen guys going at it. I figured the cops would be here by now," Ricky said. They continued staring at the bar when finally Carol spotted a body on the ground. "Oh God, somebody's on the ground," Carol exclaimed. "I hope that's not Tom," Ricky said. "I'll be right back. I'm going to go help him out," Carol said, determined. As Carol opened the door to go out, Avery started freaking out. He was still spouting gibberish, but it was panicked gibberish. Carol ignored it, but as she started to walk outside, Avery reached out and grabbed her arm. Carol had never known Avery to act like this, so it startled her. She turned and saw the panic in his eyes, so she stopped and spoke calmly. "Avery, it's gonna be okay. I'll be right back." He didn't respond, only letting go of her arm as she gently pulled his fingers away. His actions, however, had put Carol on edge. "You be ready to lock this door, preferably with me inside first," Carol told Ricky. Ricky nodded as Carol cautiously walked out the door, her fear rising as she...
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
He went. Chapter 2. Carol carefully stepped away from the convenience store, her movements deliberate and cautious as she traversed the pavement toward the gas pumps. Her eyes remained locked on the distant scene across the street, where the neon lights of the bar cast an eerie glow on a lifeless figure sprawled on the ground. "You better be okay, Tom," she murmured under her breath, her voice tinged with a mixture of concern and fondness. "You still owe me $20. A faint smile played on her lips as she chuckled softly, an attempt to quell the mounting anxiety within her. Continuing her journey past the gas pumps, she couldn't help but take in her surroundings. They found themselves in a part of town that typically thrived with activity, even at this late hour. The unsettling void of people and movement in the otherwise bustling streets sent shivers down her spine. "It's just after 2. Where are all the people?" Carol questioned aloud, her perplexity giving voice to the disconcerting silence that enveloped her. Fights that spill out into the streets were not uncommon in this area, and they usually sent patrons scattering in all directions. Yet the unusual emptiness of the street made her uneasy. Carol took a few more steps before abruptly halting in her tracks. "This isn't right." She glanced back toward the convenience store, where Avery and Ricky stood, their faces etched with fear and helplessness. Another step forward, and her attention was drawn back to the prone figure across the street. It began to twitch and stir, struggling to rise, its movements unsteady and reminiscent of a newborn deer finding its legs. "Guess he's okay," Carol mumbled to herself, the words escaping her lips louder than intended. The figure outside the bar turned its gaze toward her, and uncertainty gripped her heart. In response, she offered a hesitant, half-hearted wave in its direction. Instead of a friendly acknowledgement, the figure started sprinting toward her. Carol, paralyzed by the unfolding situation, found herself rooted in place. She muttered to herself in a desperate attempt to break free from her immobilization. "Get back to the store. Get back to the store." As the man closed in, she finally forced her legs to move, taking measured steps backward as he bore down on her, now only about 20 yards away. "Move," she urged herself with growing urgency. Carol turned and sprinted toward the store, Ricky holding the door open for her while Avery waited just inside, his eyes wide with terror. She could feel the thundering footsteps behind her, her bad ankle threatening to give way, but she powered through, her determination propelling her forward until she reached the door just in time. Ricky reacted swiftly, slamming the door shut and flicking the deadbolt just as the man outside collided face first into the glass, creating a grotesque spray of blood across the window. Carol and Ricky turned their gazes toward him, their faces marked by a blend of fear and sorrow. "It's Tom," Ricky whispered, his voice laden with disbelief. "What the hell happened to him?" Carol wondered aloud, her eyes fixed on the horrific sight before them. They examined Tom, or what remained of him, and saw that he was covered in numerous bite wounds. His flesh was torn, his clothing soaked in blood. Tom's vacant eyes darted wildly as he thrashed, a desperate attempt to gain entry to the store. Avery stared at Tom, his fear evident in the trembling of his limbs. Carol and Ricky's attention was momentarily diverted when they heard Avery running. They turned to see Avery heading toward the door on the opposite side. "Avery, stop!" Carol shouted, but her words fell on deaf ears as Avery flung open the door with such force that the handle cracked the window upon impact. Ricky and Carol rushed toward the door, hoping to coax Avery back inside, but they never got the chance. Horror washed over them as they watched Avery being tackled by several individuals. Acting on instinct, Carol moved to run outside to help him, but Ricky grabbed her arm and yanked her back inside. Carol was about to chastise Ricky for his interference when she looked out the door. Four people were now on top of Avery, savagely attacking him. The urgency of the situation grew as a middle-aged woman in a leopard print dress, covered in bite marks, sprinted toward them. Her eyes were crazed and blood smeared around her mouth, while her designer heels were long gone. "Close the door," Carol screamed, her voice laced with panic. Ricky reached outside, grasping the door that had become wedged on the window frame. As he pulled, the ghoul managed to wedge herself between the door and the frame. With all his strength, Ricky slammed the door into her ribs, the sound of bones cracking in response. Yet the ghoul exhibited no reaction, continuing her frenzied assault. She reached out, grabbing Ricky's arm, attempting to sink her teeth into his flesh. Carol acted swiftly, yanking the woman's shoulder-length bleach blonde hair backward, preventing her teeth from making contact with Ricky's skin. With her free hand, Carol grabbed the ghoul by the side of the neck, attempting to force her back outside. However, the creature's unnatural strength made it a formidable adversary. "Pull her inside," Ricky shouted, his voice filled with terror and desperation as they fought to keep the ghoul at bay. Carol's eyes shot up past the menacing figure of the date night zombie, her gaze landing on a couple of others urgently approaching the door. With a swift motion, she obeyed her instincts, grabbing the woman's hair and pulling her inside. The creature met the unforgiving floor with a sickening thud, crimson liquid splattering in its wake as it collided with a candy display, sending bags of sweets scattering in all directions. Ricky, quick on his feet, seized the opportunity to secure their sanctuary. As the other undead monstrosities arrived, they mirrored Tom's desperate assault, slamming their wretched forms against the glass, their relentless hunger driving them forward. Amid the chaos, Carol didn't relent. She delivered a swift, unapologetic kick to the fallen zombie's rear, sending it sprawling onto the blood-smeared ground. It struggled to regain its footing, slipping and sliding on the viscous floor before attempting to rise once more. Carol's eyes darted around the convenience store, her senses on high alert as she searched for a makeshift weapon. Her purse lay behind the counter, a can of mace sitting inside. However, she had second thoughts about using in such a confined space, her past experience using it indoors serving as a stark reminder. In her frantic search, her gaze landed on a glass bottle of vodka perched on a shelf. She snatched it, her arm cocked back, and with a swift backhanded motion, she swung it towards her ravenous assailant. The bottle connected with brutal force, shattering the ghoul's lower jaw, causing teeth to scatter like confetti onto the counter. Shockingly, the creature remained seemingly undeterred by the grotesque injury, lunging forward with outstretched arms, determined to sink its teeth into Carol's flesh. Undeterred, Carol swung again, the bottle meeting the creature's wrist, the bones within shattering from the impact. However, despite her valiant efforts, she couldn't evade the creature's grasp. It clutched her shirt, its fetid mouth inching ever closer to its coveted meal. With her adrenaline-fueled strength, Carol used both hands to push back against the relentless assault. She grasped the creature's shirt and drove her elbows into her own gut, barely holding the monstrous fiend at bay. Desperation filled her voice as she called out, "Help me!" Ricky's eyes darted down to the shattered bottle Carol had dropped. He swiftly moved behind the counter, positioning himself on the opposite side of the zombie duo. His hand reached for the jagged shard atop the broken bottle, a makeshift weapon with a 6-inch blade. Standing tall, Ricky's voice trembled with both fear and authority as he commanded, "Let her go, now!" The life and death struggle continued unabated, Carol's eyes locking onto Ricky's, silently pleading for action. Despite his hesitation, Ricky couldn't stand idle any longer. With a primal scream, he plunged the jagged glass into the creature's shoulder, both of them frozen in disbelief as the zombie failed to react. No screams, no writhing in pain, only a relentless onslaught. "Stab her again," Carol cried out. Ricky withdrew the shard, blood spurting out, before mercilessly driving it deep into the creature's back. Once again, there was no reaction, only the ceaseless assault. Panic filled Ricky's voice as he exclaimed, "It's not working. What do we do?" Carol's mind raced as she scanned their surroundings for a solution. Finally, her eyes locked onto the door leading to the back maintenance closet, also doubling as a storage room. "Supply closet," she yelled. Ricky nodded in agreement as Carol began backing up, keeping a firm hold on the shattered glass bottle that was plunged deep into the creature's back. The zombie thrashed wildly, knocking bags of snacks off the shelves in the process and smacking Carol squarely in the face. The two of them managed to wrestle the frenzied zombie down the narrow hallway in the direction of the closet, pausing just outside the closed door to catch their breath. Carol quickly barked out instructions to Ricky between panting gasps. "I'm going to throw this bitch inside the closet, and I need you to drive her all the way to the back wall while I get the door," Carol commanded. Ricky's eyes went wide, envisioning the possibility of being trapped inside the confined space with the deranged monster. "Okay, but don't lock me in here alone with her," he implored. Carol positioned herself firmly, grabbing both of the creature's arms while carefully avoiding the gnashing teeth. "Then you better move fast then," she shouted. With a determined nod, Carol pushed the creature with all her might, sending it hurtling toward the closet. Ricky joined the struggle, shoving the ghoul 8 feet deep into the room, pinning it against the back wall. The bottle shard embedded deep into the creature's body, grating against the concrete wall. "Here I come," Ricky called out. "I'm ready," Carol replied. Ricky placed his free hand on the zombie's shoulder and pushed it to the side, causing it to crash into a pile of boxes. As it tumbled to the ground, he sprinted back towards the door. With a few rapid strides, he cleared the doorway and Carol slammed the door shut, hastily securing it with a nearby padlock. Both of them took a step back, their breaths ragged as they listened to the creature's frantic thrashing within the closet. Seconds passed, and the zombie slammed against the door repeatedly, its desperate attempts at escape in vain. The two survivors stood there, their chests heaving with exertion, the relentless banging echoing around them. After a tense silence, Carol finally broke it. "Never thought I'd say this, but I think it's time to call the police."
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Chapter 3. The two clerks moved slowly back to the main portion of the store, their hesitant steps causing the incessant banging on the windows to intensify as the creatures caught sight of them. Carol watched with an intense gaze, taking in the ghoulish faces of the approaching horrors, their bodies marred by numerous bite marks. Then, to her shock, another creature joined the mob, and a gasp escaped her lips when she recognized it as Avery. "What the hell is going on?" Carol exclaimed. Ricky's eyes fixated on the former homeless man, whose body bore fresh bite marks, including a fatal wound to his neck. Despite the mortal injury, Avery stood upright, his vacant eyes trying to force him back into the store. Ricky, unsure of how to process the surreal scene unfolding before him, instinctively turned to the shelf behind him. His hand scanned the assortment of chips until it settled on a bag of sour cream and onion. He tore the bag open and bit into a large chip, a gesture that drew a confused look from Carol. Ricky simply shrugged as he shoved another chip into his mouth. "What? I'm a stress eater," he explained. Carol rolled her eyes and took a step toward the counter before pausing. She leaned back, reaching her hand into the bag of chips, grabbing a handful before heading to the counter. "I can get you a bag of your own if you like," Ricky offered. After a moment of consideration, Carol placed her order. "Something with barbecue. Give me the expensive kind too, not like I'm paying for it." Ricky complied, scanning the shelf for the brand name bag of chips. He couldn't help but chuckle at the absurdly high price tag. "What's so funny?" Carol asked. The fact the boss man thought he could mark these up 300% and still sell them, Ricky replied with amusement. Carol laughed too before checking the bag for the expiration date, which turned out to be a couple of weeks ago. She shrugged and opened them up. "It's not like this is what's going to kill me," she remarked, as she crunched on a chip and grabbed the phone to dial 911. The phone rang, raising a glimmer of hope, but it quickly faded as there was no answer. She looked at the phone in confusion. "What is it?" Ricky inquired. "There's no answer," Carol said, her frustration evident. At the police station. Not surprising, given the hour, Ricky reasoned. "No, 911, Carol clarified. Ricky's eyes widened, and he instinctively reached back into the chip bag. "Try them again. Maybe it's just a bad connection." Carol complied, hitting the buttons and holding the phone to her ear as it continued to ring and ring. After the sixth attempt, she hung up in frustration. "Nothing," she stated. "Try the police station directly," Ricky suggested. "You just said it wouldn't be surprising for them to not answer at this hour," Carol replied. "Not like we have anything to lose at this point," Ricky reasoned. Carol decided to give it a shot and dialed the police department's main number. Again, it rang and rang, but there was no answer. She held the phone up for Ricky to hear. "See, nothing. I don't know who else we can call. It's not like either of us knows someone who would risk their lives to rescue us," Carol lamented. Ricky was deep in thought as he continued to munch on a handful of chips. Suddenly, an idea lit up his eyes. He excitedly snapped his fingers and began to speak, albeit with bits of chewed chips flying into the air. Carol raised her hand to signal him to stop. "Finish your food. You sound like you're trying to talk with a mouthful of marbles," she scolded. Ricky did as instructed, swallowing before sharing his brilliant idea. "What about that cop?" "What cop?" "You're going to have to be a little more specific there," Carol replied. "You know, that beat cop that's sweet on you. What's his name?" "Murphy. Didn't he ask you out a few weeks back?" Ricky pressed. "Yeah, and I turned him down. One of my ex-boyfriends was a cop, and it soured me on the profession," Carol admitted. "Luckily for us, he was persistent because he gave you his card, didn't he?" Ricky pointed out. Carol's eyes widened as she realized Ricky was right. She nodded and quickly dug through her purse, finding the crumpled card at the bottom. Flipping it over, she discovered a handwritten phone number. "If you were against dating a cop, then why'd you save the card?" Ricky inquired. "Because you made me, remember? You said I should give him a chance and wouldn't let it go. So I threw his card in here and said I'd think about it, Carol explained. It's a good thing I'm persistent, and a great thing that you're lazy when it comes to cleaning out your purse, Ricky remarked with a grin. Carol glared at him as she raised her middle finger in a friendly yet obscene gesture. Unfazed, he gestured for her to pick up the nearby phone, with a huff. She snatched up the receiver and punched in a number, anticipation creeping across her face as she listened to it ring. After several tense moments, the line clicked as someone answered, though the voice that greeted her was slow and groggy, as if she had just woken them from a deep sleep. Hello? Carol's voice trembled with both relief and fear. Is this Murphy? Yeah, this is Murphy, came the response. Oh, thank God, Carol whispered. Murphy, still half asleep, tried to compose himself, knowing this call was far from ordinary. Who is this, and why are you calling me at 2 a.m? This is Carol from the store on 7th. You asked me out a couple of weeks ago, Carol explained, her voice filled with desperation. Murphy's fatigue was swiftly replaced with eagerness upon hearing Carol's voice. Hey, Carol, I'm glad to hear from you. But given the hour, I have to ask, is everything okay? It's really not, Murphy. My coworker and I are trapped at the store, Carol confessed. Trapped at your store, Murphy repeated in disbelief. Yeah, there are some really bad people outside. They've already attacked a couple of people, and they won't let us leave, Carol explained, her voice trembling. Murphy's movements on his end suggested he was hastily getting dressed while staying on the line. Hang up with me and call 911. They'll get someone to you quicker than I can get there. We tried that. There's no answer. Same at the police station, Carol replied. Silence lingered on the line as Murphy absorbed this information. Finally, he spoke again, his voice more determined. Are you safe now? Yeah, we have the doors locked, and they haven't been able to break the glass, Carol reassured him. Do you have anything to defend yourself with if they get through? Murphy inquired. We don't have a gun, but we're scrappy. Already fought off one of them, Carol replied. Murphy paused, his mind racing, before speaking again. Okay, I want you to sit tight. I'm going to be there in just a few minutes. Thank you, Murphy. And I think it goes without saying that the first round is on me when we go out, Carol added, a glimmer of hope in her voice. I look forward to it, Carol. Don't worry. Help is on the way, Murphy reassured her. Be careful when you get here. These people are on something because they don't react to pain, Carol warned. Murphy's voice held a note of confusion. Wait, what? Ricky stabbed one a couple of times, and she didn't feel it, Carol disclosed. Murphy took a moment to process this unsettling information. He knew Carol well enough not to dismiss it as a prank. Okay, I'll take care of everything. Just sit tight. Thank you, Murphy, Carol said before the line went dead. Relief washed over her and Ricky as they knew that help was on its way. Carol turned to Ricky, a smile breaking through her anxiety. Said he'll be here in a few minutes. Ricky, though relieved, had a more practical thought. Got time for one more quick drink if you want one. Carol, however, had a different plan in mind. While that sounds good, I was thinking more of packing some stuff to go. Ricky raised an eyebrow, puzzled. Packing some stuff to go? Yep, Carol affirmed. She emerged from behind the counter, grabbing a couple of heavy plastic reusable bags and tossing some over to Ricky. Pack all the food you can into these. Maybe a bottle or two of something strong. I'm going to get water with these. Ricky hesitated. Boss is going to be pissed. Carol's concern for their boss was overshadowed by the grim reality outside. You assume that the boss is ever setting foot in here again. Look at those things outside. Knowing how much he liked to hang out at the dive down the street, there's a good chance he's either just like them, or he's hiding someplace, just like us. Ricky nodded in acknowledgement. Solid point. In any case, I really don't care about his opinion at the moment. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I get the sense that what's happening out there just isn't happening here, Carol explained, her voice tinged with uncertainty. What makes you think that? Ricky asked. Because look at our town. There's nothing left here since the factory closed. Nobody would target us for an attack, because if they did, it might be weeks before the rest of the world noticed, Carol reasoned. Ricky conceded her point with a nod. The two of them quickly started loading goods into their bags, aware that this might be their only source of sustenance for the foreseeable future. Minutes passed before the screeching of tires echoed from the next block. Carol and Ricky rushed to the door, peering past the zombies pressed against the glass. "There's your man," Ricky exclaimed. Carol couldn't help but roll her eyes. "You know that's going to get real old, real quick, don't you?" "Most definitely," Ricky agreed with a wry smile. Carol shook her head, and they both watched as Murphy's car screeched to a halt at the edge of the parking lot. He jumped out of the car, instantly drawing his gun, but keeping it at his side. As soon as he emerged, three of the creatures broke away from the building and charged toward him. Murphy raised his voice in warning. "On the ground, now." Carol couldn't contain her anxiety as Murphy stood there, hesitating to use his weapon against the oncoming trio of ghouls. "Just shoot them," she pleaded. Finally, Murphy realized that he wasn't dealing with ordinary people and reluctantly raised his weapon. His first shots hit one of the rushing creatures in the chest, doing little to slow it down. It was only when he aimed for the head that it finally dropped. However, the other two were dangerously close. Carol and Ricky watched helplessly as the officer they had called for help became overwhelmed by the two zombies. A shot rang out into the night sky as they pinned him against the car, their frenzied moaning filling the air as they tore into his flesh. Ricky could see that Carol was devastated, shaking uncontrollably and unable to speak. He grabbed her arm and dragged her back into the store, down an aisle, and to the ground. Finally, she snapped out of her shock. "What are you doing?" Carol asked. "Those things are away from the store. I'm hoping they're dumb and won't come back if they don't see us," Ricky explained. "What good is that going to do?" Carol questioned. Ricky sat down beside her, his own bewilderment evident in his eyes. "Give us time to think of something." "Think of what?" Carol's voice was tinged with despair. Ricky sat in silence for a moment before admitting, "I don't know, Carol. I don't know." Chapter 4. 10 minutes had passed since Officer Murphy's demise. In that time, the only notable event in the store was Ricky munching through half a bag of chips. Carol, on the other hand, remained in a state of shock, her gaze fixed straight ahead, tainted by feelings of guilt. Ricky, cautiously standing up, glanced toward the windows. On the side where Murphy had shown up, not a single creature pressed against the glass. But on the other side, Zombie Tom continued his relentless assault on the window, desperate to get inside. Ricky knelt back down. "I think I have an idea," Ricky said. Carol, her voice trembling, confessed, "I killed him." Ricky was taken aback. "What?" "Murphy," Carol clarified. "I killed him. The first man to show interest in me in years, and I practically offered him to those things like a waiter serving dinner." "Stop it," Ricky urged. "You didn't kill him." Carol's eyes welled up with tears. "If I hadn't called him, he'd still be asleep in his bed." Ricky tried to console her, and as soon as he woke up, he would have stepped into this world and become a cop, only without the warning you gave him. You gave him a chance to survive. Carol nodded in agreement, letting his words sink in. "Yeah, you're right. Still, that one is going to stick with me for a while." "Well," Ricky said, "if my plan works, you'll have plenty of time to grieve." Curiosity filled Carol's voice. "What are you thinking?" "Those things are all over his car, so there's no way we're going to be able to get to it. And even if we did, Where the hell would we go? Carol interjected. Exactly, Ricky continued. So, if we have no place to go, our best plan is to sit here and wait for the military. So what are you thinking? Carol pressed. Well, that glass is strong, but if enough of those things show up, they'll be able to break in, Ricky explained. Oh shit, Carol realized. You want to close the shutters, don't you? Yep, Ricky confirmed. And if we don't do it now, we might not get another chance. I mean, I agree with you, Carol admitted. But how do you propose we get out there to close them? Those things aren't exactly going to let us outside. Ricky reassured her. Well, Murphy managed to pull all of them away from that side of the building, so it shouldn't be much of an issue to get out and pull it down before they catch wind. It won't be fully secure since I need to be on this side of it. But it should do. Carol had a solution in mind. Don't worry. We can secure it from in here. Ricky was intrigued. How? Remember that snowstorm a couple of years back? 4 feet in 3 days? Carol said. Yeah, Ricky responded. I got stuck here for 3 days straight, Carol said. I wasn't about to take a nap without those things down. So I made a few modifications to the shutters. Anybody with a brain would be able to circumvent it. And lucky for us, these things seem to be even dumber than our normal customers. Ricky chuckled. That's actually impressive. Thank you, Carol replied. But you don't have to sound so surprised I could come up with that. Ricky clarified. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how he finally found something dumber than our customers. They both shared a brief laugh, momentarily breaking the tension and fear that had gripped them. But what about our bouncer friend over here? Carol asked. I don't think we're going to be able to overpower him like the cougar we have in the closet back there. Ricky had a plan for that too. We kill him. Carol inquired, how? When Murphy was shooting, I saw one of those things take a round to the head. It dropped it, Ricky explained. So you want to stab the bouncer in the head? Carol questioned. With what? Not sure either of us is strong enough to break a skull. We have that ice pick in the back for the freezer, Ricky suggested. Get him in the eye, and it just might work. Carol stood up, peeking over the aisle, observing the hulking beast continuing to beat on the glass. Surprisingly, there weren't any more creatures behind him. Not thrilled with the idea, Carol admitted. Ricky understood her hesitation. I'm open to a better one. Carol sighed. Wish I had one. So which one do we hit first? Ricky asked. I'm all for the path of least resistance. Let's get the clear one down, Carol said. Ricky proposed, rock, paper, scissors to see who goes outside. Carol pointed towards the empty side of the store. If you do that one, I'll use the ice pick. Done, Ricky replied quickly. Carol chuckled at his swift response. Come on, let's get this done. Both of them got up, moving quickly but quietly up to the door. They looked out and saw that there were 4 creatures by the police car. But Murphy wasn't one of them, nor was he still on the ground. The only evidence of his presence was a gun lying beside a bloodstain on the door. They glanced side to side, not spotting any other creatures. Ricky gave Carol a nod, and she gently started turning the deadbolt on the door. Despite her best efforts, there was a distinct and loud thunk as it unlatched. The noise drew the attention of the creatures by the car, a good 25 yards away from the store. Go, Carol urged. Ricky dashed outside, aware that time was of the essence. He swiftly turned and leaped up, grabbing the rope above the door, pulling it down with all his might. The metal door only got a third of the way down before it got stuck. He tugged, but it didn't move, so he had to jump up, using his body weight to pull it as hard as he could. Thankfully, it broke free and got close to the ground. Ricky quickly ducked underneath the door, and both of them pushed it down to the ground, just as the zombie reinforcements arrived. Ricky held the door firmly as Carol grabbed a chain from behind one of the displays and swiftly threaded it through the slots on the metal. She then found a small metal bar, sliding it through the links. "Okay, we're good," Carol announced. They both backed away slowly from the metal shutter, relieved to see that it was holding. Just to be safe, they shut the door and deadbolted it again. "That was fun," Ricky commented. Carol laughed and patted Ricky on the back in appreciation. "Go get the ice pick while I figure out how we're going to do this." As Ricky ran to the back, Carol stared down the large zombie on the other side of the building. He stood over 6 feet tall and appeared as if he had spent every waking moment at the gym. "If we unlatch that door, he's just coming through, and there won't be anything we can do about it," Carol thought, searching for any useful items. Finally, she spotted half a dozen boxes of liquor that hadn't been shelved yet. She picked one up. It was hefty, weighing around 40 pounds. Over 200 pounds of liquor, plus about the same coming from Ricky, Carol calculated, might not hold him for long, but we don't need long. Carol's heart raced as she gazed at the menacing creature before her. Doubt crept in as she realized that missing her target could spell disaster for both her and Ricky. "Get it together, girl," Carol muttered to herself, her voice barely above a whisper. "One stab, a shove out the door, secure the shutter, and it's time for a well-earned drink or six." Ricky returned to the front of the store, ice pick in hand, a formidable weapon with its 18-inch length. "You figure out how we're doing this?" Ricky asked, concern in his eyes. "Yeah, help me move these boxes," Carol replied. Together, they set up a barricade, allowing the door to open only about a foot. It was enough space for the creature to stick its head through, but hopefully not wide enough for Ricky and the bottles to fail in blocking it. Finally, they were ready. Carol practiced a few stabs at head height, but her lack of confidence was evident. Ricky tried to boost her spirits. "It's just like shanking a bitch in the joint." Carol shot him a glare. "You know I've never been in jail, right?" "Okay, just like shanking a bitch in the bar bathroom because she looked your man up and down?" "That's better," Carol conceded. Ricky took a deep breath, getting into position beside the boxes. He planted his feet firmly, nodding to Carol, signaling his readiness. She leaned down to flip the deadbolt, her gaze fixed on the creature lurking just to the side of the door. "As soon as I flip this, you pull that door to you and hold on, because this boy ain't far behind," Carol instructed. "I'll hold him. Just don't take too long," Ricky replied. Carol nodded, then turned back to the door. She flipped the lock, and Ricky immediately pulled the door into place, using his body and the liquor boxes to keep it secure. In an instant, the creature slammed into the opening, shoving its arm and head through the crack. The arm flailed wildly, making it challenging for Carol to aim her ice pick. She swung with all her might, aiming for the creature's head. But at the last second, the arm knocked hers off course. The ice pick glanced off the side of the creature's face, tearing a chunk of flesh with it. Frustrated, Carol tried again, with the same result. "Damn it!" she exclaimed. Ricky urged her to hurry, and Carol noticed him and the boxes sliding under the pressure of the zombie. She steadied herself, not worrying about precision this time, knowing the flailing limb would divert her blow. With all her strength, she thrust her arm forward. The zombie's arm brushed against hers, altering her aim. But this time, the ice pick found its mark, piercing the eye socket. The ice pick went halfway through the skull before stopping, but Carol didn't hesitate. She used the palm of her hand to drive the weapon deeper into the skull. The flailing ceased, and the zombie went limp. Ricky held the creature in place long enough for Carol to shove it out of the store. She quickly darted outside, grabbed the metal shutter, and slammed it shut, securing it. No sooner had they secured it than they heard moans and footsteps approaching in the distance. Peering through the slots in the metal, they spotted half a dozen more of those horrifying creatures sprinting toward them. As the creature slammed into the metal, both Carol and Ricky collapsed to the ground, their legs giving out. The banging on the metal shutters intensified. "So, how long do you think we can ride it out in here?" Ricky asked. "If we're careful with the food, a few weeks." "Maybe a month," Carol replied. Ricky chuckled. "Don't know about you, but I'm staying on the clock. If I have to be here, I'm getting paid." They both laughed, realizing the absurdity of their situation. After a few moments of joviality, the only sound in the store was the relentless banging on the metal shutters. "I'll make you a deal," Ricky suggested. "I'll mix us up some cocktails if you want to find something on the radio." Carol agreed. "Oh, that's a deal." "Clear or brown liquor?" Ricky inquired. "My alcoholism is bilingual, so I'll have what you're having," Carol replied. "Got it. Any preference on the station?" Carol added. "There's a late-night hair metal show on the classic rock station, assuming they're still on the air," Ricky replied. "Can't go wrong with a little hair metal. I'll get it queued up." As the two co-workers set about making their sanctuary from the apocalypse a bit more bearable, Carol hesitated with her hand at the dial. She thought about finding news, but quickly dismissed the idea. "There's no way that the news is good," Carol thought to herself. "And there's even less of a chance this town was going to be a priority to save. So might as well relax tonight." She switched to the hair metal show and sighed with relief as high-pitched vocals and shredding guitar solos filled the air. Ricky returned with a large red cup, and they raised their plastic cups in a toast. "To a hell of a lot of overtime," Ricky proposed. They both chuckled and clinked their cups. They didn't know what the future held, but for the moment, there was nothing they could do but drink and try to forget the horrors happening just outside those store walls. The end.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.